Inside Crime is brought to you by doTERRA. The doTERRA drug deactivation pouch provides an easy and effective way to dispose of unused or expired medication. Learn more at doTERRAsystem.com. Stay safe, stay ready with doTERRA. I'm Angeline Hartman. I've spent my career as a journalist covering some of the worst crimes in history. My craft is storytelling. My passion is crime fighting. With this podcast, I'm bringing you more stories, candid conversations with crime victims, their families, and law enforcement. We'll journey together as we learn what happens inside crime. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Inside Crime. My guest today is Deputy Danny Reyes with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Danny has spent most of his career in law enforcement on patrol in East Los Angeles. In 2011, Danny was on patrol with his partner when he ended up in a fight for his life. Danny takes us back to that day and explains what happened and how he survived. Welcome to Inside Crime, Deputy Sheriff Danny Reyes.
Hi, good evening. Hi, Angeline.
Hi, thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you for the invitation.
Let's talk about your career. How long have you been with LA County Sheriff's Department?
I've been with the Sheriff's Department for a little bit over 28 years now. I joined the Sheriff's Department in 1990 after graduating from college. And I worked the jails for 6 years. And after 6 years, in 1996, I went out to patrol. And right now I'm stationed at East Los Angeles, and I've been there almost 20 years. And I'm a field training officer as well as a reserve coordinator, reserve training officer. I also help out with our community relations, and I'm in charge of security for any parades. I also help out with community events.
It sounds like you have a good variety.
Yes. Yes, it is. Keeps me busy. And when I'm not doing the community relations stuff, then I go back on patrol and I help out with our field training program. And I help out with the trainees that are in their latter part of their training to make sure they're okay. And right now that's what I'm doing. I'm back on patrol.
You have a unique experience that you speak out about now. Can you tell me about that?
Well, this incident took place back in 2011. I was a training officer and working with a trainee, a person who's new out to patrol, and he was in his fifth week on training. And I was involved in a fight for my life. It was a life and death situation. And as a result, during the fight, my trainee ended up getting shot in the face, and he ended up losing his eye. I remember that day very clearly. As a routine, you know, as a patrol officer, I stress physical, you know, being physically in shape. And since I became a deputy, and even prior to becoming deputy, I've always worked out. I always try to stay in shape, and I always made sure that I hit the gym. And the only times I didn't was when I was injured or had an injury. But throughout my 28 years, you could ask people around; they always knew me for always trying to be inside the gym or doing some type of workout. And so I remember that day I went to the gym in the morning, and I had a protein shake, and I, as a routine, I would eat something prior to going to work, but I knew I was limited with time, and I was rushing myself, and I thought to myself, you know, when I get to work, as soon as we get our car and we go on the field, then I'll grab something quick to eat. Well, as soon as we got to work, you know, I got in the car, turned on our computer, and next thing you know, we're getting bombarded with calls for service. So, you know, we go out.
It never works out as you plan, right?
Yes, exactly. Especially in patrol, you can never make plans. And so as soon as we got in the car, and as a training officer, you want to go handle your calls. So we went out, handled our calls. And in between calls, I actually had a parolee at large. Took off running from us, and we set up. I got some other units with me, and we started looking for this guy. And by the time I knew it was already 7 p.m. And the last thing I had in my stomach was a protein shake, probably about 7 o'clock a.m.
Oh,
and
wow.
And I felt it. And I was up in the hills of East Los Angeles, up in City Terrace. And I told my trainee, I said, you know what? I can't focus. I need to go eat. I'm feeling lightheaded. I don't feel good. So I decided, you know what? Now's the time to go to the station. My wife had packed me a lunch. So actually it was a dinner, and I had it at the station. I told him, let's go to the station and I'll pick up my lunch and I'll get something to eat. So I drove down the hill from City Terrace and I came across this vehicle, and the vehicle where it was stopped, just give you a little background about the area. The area is known for narcotics. It's a gang infested area, and the car was illegally parked. And so the first thing that crossed my mind is, besides them being illegally parked and having them move on, was, you know, that there was a house that sold narcotics. And I thought, okay, maybe they're there to pick up some narcotics. And that could be a quick arrest for me. You know, I can go to the station, and while he's booking whoever we arrest, I can go grab my lunch. That was the plan. So we drive up to the vehicle, and I actually drove alongside of it. I wanted to see who was inside of it. And as I passed it up, I saw there was a female driver. Didn't think anything of it. And I told the trainee, hey, you know, tell her to move the car because they're not supposed to be parked there. Well, I continued driving and I noticed the car was still there. But as I passed them up a little bit, I saw that there was a male passenger. And I remember as we stopped to look at them, the guy wouldn't look at us. The individual that was sitting on the passenger side made no effort to look at us. And normally we'll get the, okay, deputy, you know, we'll move it, and didn't say a word. So that obviously grew my suspicion right there. So I backed up and I asked the trainee, Deputy Ahmed, you know, speak to the driver, and I wanted to see the actions of the passenger, and still wouldn't look at us. Okay. So that was a red flag right there. I got
now,
out of the
now,
car.
Can you now? So yeah, that's what I wanted to make sure that I'm visualizing this correctly. So when you say speak to the driver, you're telling him to basically get out of the car and make contact with the driver.
Well, initially it was when I told him, ask her what she's doing. Why are they parked there? Just simple questions, trying to get a feel of why they were stopped there. And I remember she was telling my trainee that, you know, she was fixing her ankle or her knee brace. And she mentioned something about fixing a knee brace, that they had just stopped there and they were going to leave, you know? And so as my trainee's asking her questions, that's when I noticed that the passenger, a male passenger, he wouldn't look at us. And so,
and where are you standing at this point?
We're actually still in the patrol car. We're parked parallel to them.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So it wasn't really a traffic stop per se. Mm-hmm. It was more of just a contact. Hey, you know, move your car on. But then when I noticed that the passenger wasn't, you know, looking at us and wouldn't say anything, then, I decided, you know what, let me go contact him. I wanted to go speak to him. And that's when I walked up to the passenger side, and I recognized him as a local gang member who was on parole. I hadn't seen him in a while, but I don't think he recognized me. And so as I stood there talking to him, I noticed he was really nervous. He was fidgeting, he was moving around. And one thing that caught my attention was he was holding on to a Dr. Pepper soda can. And at one point I knew, since he was on parole, you know, a person that's on parole is subject to search and seizure. So you can search him at any time. Those are part of parole conditions. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him to step out, put the soda can down. And when he put the soda can down, you know, it started spilling on the floorboard, and I expected his immediate reaction would have to pick up the soda can, cause it was a nice clean car. Mm-hmm. And when he didn't make any effort to pick up that soda can, you know, I knew there was something wrong with this. I knew something was up, you know. And so I immediately opened up the door. And of course, he jumped out, caught me off guard. And you got to remember, I wasn't 100% focused because of my lightheadedness and the fact that I hadn't eaten. And I put myself in a really bad position at the time. And so he steps out, he pushes me back, catches me off balance, and he started running down the street. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not going to let another parolee get away from me. So he took about 5 steps and I came up behind him and I was able to tackle him to the ground. And as soon as we went to the ground, the fight was on. I was fighting with him on the ground until my trainee, who a couple of seconds later, I saw him running towards me. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, once the trainee gets there, we're going to handcuff this guy. And, you know, I know he's on parole, but we're going to find out, you know, why did he take off running? That
so
point,
you guys are kind of tussling on the ground. You're both.
Yes, we're now we're both on the ground. The trainee, Deputy Med, joins us, and now all three of us are tussling on the ground. We're grappling with him. You know, there's punches thrown, elbows, and at one point, I try to get on my radio to put out the assistance call, the deputy involved in the fight, and as soon as I let go, I sense that he was starting to get up on his feet, and he was overpowering both of us. And at that point, I try to I try to grab him again, hold on to him. And that's when, you know, I heard what sounded like a firecracker. And if you talk to a lot of people that are involved in shootings, and they'll tell you, you know, even people in the streets, they'll tell you when they hear, it always sounds like a firecracker. And that's exactly what I thought it was, a firecracker. But, you know, why would anybody be popping firecrackers in January, right? So when I heard that sound, I immediately jumped up to my feet, and I noticed that my partner, Deputy Med, was on the ground. But I was kind of slightly covered. He was slightly covered because the individual, the parolee, he actually was on his feet, but he had his back towards me, and I was literally probably about a foot away. He turns around, and the next thing you know, I'm staring down the barrel of a black handgun. And my immediate reaction was to grab the gun with both hands and try to take it away from this guy. And as soon as I put both hands on that gun, I was tussling over the gun with this guy, and he was relentless. He wasn't letting go. And it was at that point that everything just started going in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And as I'm looking down the barrel of this gun, and everything's going in slow motion, I thought to myself, this wasn't happening. You always think about these situations, but you never think that you're going to be involved in one. But, you know, that's how you mentally prepare yourself, is by putting yourself in situations. And so as things started slowing down, I kept thinking to myself, this is not happening. This is not real. I didn't even thought at one point, you know, I thought to myself, if I let go of the gun, I'll wake up from this scenario, because I don't like the way this scenario is turning. In all my scenarios, I always win. I always come on top. I always come out alive, and I win. And in this one, I was losing it. And I actually thought about letting go of the gun, thinking, okay, this isn't going on. See, I remember looking back, and not earlier I mentioned that I was in focus, and I wasn't focused. And I really felt this wasn't happening. I start thinking.
And you know, is he saying anything at this point? Or you guys,
not a word.
Your partner's on the ground, and where's the female?
The female is still in the car. And, you know, with the, I heard the radio traffic, and you can hear her yelling. She's yelling, no, no, no. But she's still in the car watching the whole thing. She was actually our best witness. And he's not saying a word. It was kind of odd, because this guy did not say one word. And so as I'm holding onto the gun, and I almost felt like giving up, I remember.
Because you're weak. You're not
weak.
At full
yes.
capacity.
Yes, I'm very weak. And then I visualized my family. I saw my kids. I saw my wife. It was as though they were hovering over me, and they were waiting to see what I was going to do.
Wow.
And the thought of not being there for my family is really got to me, made me angry. Just to share with you a little bit inside of back when I was in the academy, there was a video that they used to, a training video that they used to show the recruits. It's called The Will to Survive. It's an officer survival video. And it tells two deputies over in the Firestone area who were shot. There were, I think it was five suspects, and they were basically shot and being beaten alive. And these officers, these deputies, they remember in the academy an instructor standing up there, and they remember that instructor telling them, you know, no matter how hurt you are, no matter how tired you are, you never give up. You never give up. You fight back.
Keep fighting.
Fight back. Don't give up. And it shows those officers, the deputies, and it shows them remembering what that instructor, the academy instructor, saying, And it also shows them thinking about their families, their wife, their kids. And I think that's what got them angry. And that's what got me angry. The thought of not being there. Not being there and watching your kids and your family and not watching them grow up. That really made me angry.
This is playing in your mind while Wow.
Yes. It made me angry, and that anger turned to this rage. And I told myself, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to fight back. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to stay alive. And so with that said, I remember, and I resorted back to my training days. I thought to myself, okay, I need to get this barrel pointed away from me, because the barrel at this whole time was pointed directly at me. And people asked me, well, why didn't he fire the gun? And I think a good reason was the fact that I was holding on to the slide of the gun from retracting back, and he might have been pulling that trigger, but I wasn't letting him get that round in there. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm holding on to that gun, I'm thinking of different ways, so different techniques that I learned in the academy, you know, turning the gun over, getting my finger on that trigger and start pointing the barrel towards him and firing. But like I said, he was relentless. He wasn't budging. So I got to the point where I decided, you know what, I'm just going to pull as hard as I can and try to take this gun away out of his hands. And I pulled the gun about 180 degrees and his whole body went with it. Wow. I was able to push him against a fence, a chain link fence, and I had him pinned up against a fence. And as I had him pinned up against a fence, I still had that barrel pointed at me, and I knew that at one point I needed to go get my gun out. And I needed to end this, because I was looking at a couple minutes that were on the ground and now fighting over the gun. And so,
I'm sure it felt like a lifetime.
Oh my gosh. Yes, it did. It felt forever. And as I had him pinned up against the fence and I knew that I had to get my gun out, I was able to turn the gun away from me. And as soon as I turned it away, I went down to reach for my gun. And at that point he fired two rounds. He fired twice. And luckily I had the barrel pointed away from me. The bullets, I found out after the investigation that they hit a car that was just up the street. And so after he fired that second round, or it was actually simultaneously, I went down for my gun. I came over and I pointed directly at his face and I fired two shots. And I knew that that's the only way I was going to end it, because I knew if I didn't, he was going to end up killing me. And if he already had killed my partner, he was going to kill both of us.
Inside Crime is brought to you by DoTERRA. The DoTERRA drug deactivation pouch provides an easy and effective way to get rid of unused or expired medication. The DoTERRA pouch makes addictive drugs like opioids unusable in minutes. Just place the medication in the pouch and mix with water. Be a part of America's solution to reduce drug abuse. Learn more at doterrasystem.com. Stay safe, stay ready with DoTERRA.
I went down for my gun. I came over and I pointed directly at his face and I fired two shots. And I knew that that's the only way I was going to end it, because I knew if I didn't, he was going to end up killing me. And if he already had killed my partner, he was going to kill both of us. And so after the second shot, I saw his gun fall to the ground and I backed up and I was assessing the situation. I was making sure that the threat was no longer there. And when I looked back, I saw his gun on the ground and I saw that his slide was back. The top of his gun was back. And I thought to myself, wow, did he run out of bullets? You know, because sometimes these people on the streets, they don't fill up the guns with, you know, the full capacity. They'll throw a couple bullets in there. So in the back of my mind, I thought, okay, he's got no more bullets. And after I shot him, it was kind of strange, because he was wearing a big jacket and somehow the jacket got caught on the fence. And so after I shot him, he was still standing. He never went down to the ground. And, you know, some people described it like he was standing as though he was a scarecrow. His arms were stuck. His jacket was stuck. And he was still on his feet. And I didn't know where I shot him. I knew I shot him in the face. Mm-hmm. But his hair, he had long hair and it was in a ponytail. But during the fight, his hair covered his face. So I never got to see exactly where I shot him to afterwards. I looked back and I saw his weapon on the ground, and then I turned around and I noticed he had a second gun. He had two guns on him that night.
Oh, wow.
The second gun was a revolver, six-shot revolver. It was stolen out of Phoenix, I believe, Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah, so I knew that the threat was no longer there. So I went to my trainee, Deputy Ahmed, and he said a few words. And I told him, look, you're standing, you're walking, you're talking, you're going to be okay. I'm going to get you some help. So I immediately got on the radio, and I put out all the information that, you know, I needed to put out. And then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, you know, paramedics are going to show up. The deputy's going to show up. You know, we're good. A couple of seconds go by, I hear nothing on the radio. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, what's going on? Nobody's responding. I don't hear no sirens. And I look down on my radio. The radios that we had were fairly new. So we were all getting kind of adjusted to them. And I noticed that my toggle switch had been moved, and the light and the channels were blinking. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm fumbling, trying to fix my radio. And I said, oh, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. So I ran to my patrol car, and I used my patrol car radio to put out the information. While the information was being put out, somehow there was a miscommunication. The dispatchers, they got the wrong streets put out. And so that took some more minutes for people to respond. So for me, it felt like forever getting help. The deputies were actually a mile away when they were asking, where are they at? Where are they at? And finally, when I realized that the wrong streets were put out over the radio, I had to compose myself because I was still trying to catch my breath. And I put out, you know what? I'm over here at these streets. And then that's when all the deputies started arriving. Everybody was arriving, people from other stations. When something like
because
that happens.
Because the call went out as what?
A deputy's been shot. Suspect's been shot. And I need, when you hear a deputy's been shot, everybody in the county is going to respond.
Yep.
I mean, we had, you know, other agencies, we had other stations, not just East LA, but stations all around the county. And, you know, at one point, you know, me being the senior guy out there, they actually came up to me and asked me, hey, what do we do? Do we leave them here, wait for the paramedics? Do we wait for, the ambulance, or do we just take them? Because we have the county USC hospital, which is, you know, literally minutes away. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I had to recompose myself again and think about it. And I said, well, find out how long, you know, it's going to take for the fire department to get there. If they're not here within 1 minute, use a sergeant's Tahoe and put them in the back seat and transport. And so luckily, right as I said that, the paramedics showed up. And like I said, he was transported to the hospital. And through many surgeries, as a result, he ended up losing his eye. And he's got a prosthetic eye, but he's still in the department. And the sheriff allowed him to stay, you know, working. So it was quite an experience. So I'd like to share this experience with as many people as I can. And, you know, and hoping that it has an impact. And it did. We actually had three deputies shot on duty, I say over a month ago, and we had a barbecue for one of the deputies, and I was there, and I happened to show up a little late, and he came over to me. He saw me, and he had this big smile on his face, and he came over to me. He goes, Danny, I got to give you something. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I had no idea what he was talking about. And he goes, come up with me because I want to present this to you. And I'm like, I'm thinking, I'm puzzled. I'm like, what's he going to present to me? I go, he's the one who got shot. And so he went up in front of everybody and he pulled out a challenge coin. It was a gunfight survivor challenge coin. And he told everybody, he said, I just want to say one thing is that I want to, you know, thank Danny for him sharing his story. Because I remember listening to his story one day, and I was involved in a fight for my life, and I was fighting with somebody who had a gun. And I remembered his words of never giving up. And he goes, the reason I'm here today is because of him. And I wanted to thank him. Man. And I was shocked, and I had no idea. And, you know, to know that my sharing of my incident did have an impact on one person so far, you know, it was a great feeling, and to hear that was awesome. It was a great feeling.
Well, I'm sure your story has impacted many people that just it may not have told you, have never told you, you know? So it is.
I hope so.
Yeah. Do we ever find out what, like, I mean, I know you said the guy was a parolee, but like.
Yes.
What was the deal that day? Why did, you know?
Well, a little background about this individual. He had just come out of prison. He did 7 years in prison. And the last time he was in prison was for shooting at somebody. I'm 5'6", about 170 pounds. This individual is 5'10", about 250 pounds, much larger than both myself and my deputy med. That night, they found traces of PCP, methamphetamine, cocaine, alcohol, marijuana in his system. So the last thing he said to the female driver was that he wasn't going back to prison. And I think he was going to do whatever he had to, whether it was me, Ahmed, or the next deputy or officer that pulls him over. And he was going to kill one of us before he went back to prison. And I think that's what his mind was set on doing. Those were his last words to the female. And she was our best witness. She actually witnessed the whole incident. She saw the individual pull the gun out of his waistband, point it to Deputy Ahmed's face, and shoot him. And, you know, and I talked to other people, and they said that this guy was eventually going to probably kill an officer or deputy down the line if you wouldn't have done what you did.
When you tell your story, you make it a point to start talking about your day early on that morning, right?
Yes.
And, yeah. And how everything else led to that situation. Led up to that point, how you were prepared or not prepared, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your message to people is what?
Stay in shape. That's one of the key things that I think kept me alive that night. The fact that I could stay in the fight. And that goes for anybody and everybody is that being healthy, you know, being healthy, staying in shape, eating the right stuff, especially for patrol deputies, you know, because you never know when you're going to encounter somebody who's twice your size, who's somebody's on all kinds of drugs, and who's somebody who doesn't want to go to prison, doesn't want to go back. They're going to fight you. And it doesn't matter that you have a gun and a badge. They'll take your life. Now, I'm also a believer in, you know, mind over matter, the will to survive, the will to keep going. You know, I had that the fight or flight syndrome, and it worked. And I believe I'm a true testament. I look back and I think back of the situation I was in. You know, the feeling weak, not having any food in my system, this guy being on drugs, being twice my size. I shouldn't have won this fight. But my mind took over, the fact that I was physically fit to stay in the fight. And I think the mental preparation, being mentally prepared for a situation like this, not giving up, going back to resorting to my training days, all of that kicked in. All of that had a big role in my survival that night. I'm alive today because of all that. And that's the main point that I try to get across is that, you know, all those things put together kept me alive that night. And the fact, my family, I think that was, that probably was the most important thing was the thought of not going home to your family. That's what really put me over the edge is that.
Yeah. It sounds like you got like a certain surge of energy once you, you know, like you said, you got enraged. Thinking about that.
Yes, that's what really got me really upset.
It's been how many years since this happened? I forget what year you said this
2011. And I'm still sharing my my experience with the academy classes. It is tough at times. You know, there's times looking back the very first few times sharing with the academy, it was tough. It was tough. I almost broke down a few times. Especially when I start thinking about my family, that's the hardest part. And that's the hardest part of just the thought of it could have been a different outcome. And you know, I'm not afraid to share this with people, but you know, in our department, we're asked to go see the psychologist after you're involved in a shooting. It's mandatory. Mm-hmm. And you have to get cleared to go see them. And then I did go see them. And they recommended I come back, and I agreed to it. So I went a few times, and after a couple of months, I said, "Oh, I'm good, I'm okay." And I remember being at home, and my wife, noticing that there's a couple of times where I was breaking down, and I didn't know why. And she said, "Maybe you should go back because there's something going on." And I knew why, because you look back and you reflect on everything that's around you. And when you have that thought process of, you know what, there was a chance that, you're not there. You wouldn't be here.
It could have gone a different way.
It could have gone a different way. Yes. And I knew I couldn't. There was a hump that I needed to get over that I was stuck at, because I kept thinking about, it could have turned differently. And so I knew that I had to get past that in order to get back to work, get back in a patrol car, and go do what I love doing. So I went back and I spoke to the psychologist, and, we went over the incident, piece by piece. And I think being able to share with her and breaking it down, it finally got me to the point where I stopped thinking about what could have happened. And I start thinking of what did happen. The fact that, Deputy Ahmed is still alive, I'm alive, and that's all that mattered. All these accolades, they don't really mean much to me. The greatest thing was the fact that, my partner's still alive. That was the greatest thing that I could wish for.
Because that could have gone a different way.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Well, you certainly have a story, and we're so grateful that you share it and you continue to share it, because I do think it's important. What would you say to new people on the job now, as a veteran that you are? What would your advice be to them?
Stay shape, stay mentally focused, treat people with respect. And I know that our Sheriff Villanueva, that's one thing that he stresses, is respecting the community. That's a big thing for him. And I agree. I've always had that same philosophy that, you got to go out there and treat people with respect and talk to the people, talk to the community. The night of the shooting, there's a video, and you'll see some people coming out of that house holding towels. And they came out and they were applying pressure to my trainee. Mm-hmm. These are people that are drug dealers. But the fact that they knew it was me involved, and they had respect for me, they came out and they actually guided the deputies in. And I remember hearing them telling my partner, "You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay." They were actually, helping us out.
Deputy Reyes, thank you so much for sharing your story. And thank you so much for your service to your community. Maybe they don't tell you every day, but we certainly appreciate you. And I am sure your community appreciates everything you've given.
Thank you, Angeline. Really appreciate that.
And that's it for this edition of Inside Crime. Thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Angeline Hartman. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Inside Crime.